The Guardian.
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
5-1. 5-1. Dutch are smoking as Van Gaal's men roll up in Salvador and light up the joint with the decidedly blunt Spanish. How did they do it and can it last? We'll be talking about that. Plus, there's the rest of Friday's action. Chile failed to boss Oz and Mexico with the worst Cameroon performance since he held up that copy of The Sun. Then it's on to day three. Uruguay have ants in their pants ahead of Costa Rica. There's a Socrates back playing in Brazil as Greece face Colombia. And Dateline Manaus ahead of the big England-Italy showdown. We send Barney Rone into the sweltering jungle city for an account with Amazon. All that and more in World Cup Football Daily. All right, it's day two of the World Cup. What a special day it was. Went on quite a bit, and I feel a bit sorry for poor Chile and Australia with their brave game that came a little bit after, you know, all the fireworks of Holland, Spain. But still, what a selection of matches, and what a selection of people we have here in the pod today. It's James Horncastle and Barry Glenning, much like yesterday, in fact, but no less special for all that. Hi to you both.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey. Hey, back at you.
Sorry, could I just take quickly this opportunity to state categorically for the record, it is not me that does the big long goal announcement at the start of the show.
There you go, it's your Brazilian cousin.
Yeah, there's no way, my lungs are far too knackered for me to be able to hold it that long.
All very interesting. Anyway, as I say, all sorts of drama in this day too, particularly the event that rocked the world of football, Spain's... The Red Wedding. A lot of people are comparing it to the Red Wedding, or las Bodegas Rojas, that I spoke to. Steve Anthony, lots of people tweeting in. Let's read out one or two. Steve and Anthony, in case you guys are wondering what time it is, it's 5 past Casillas. Here's another one. Paul Snoop, Spain kicked in the nether region. Well, they were, weren't they, Barry? They were.
Yeah, I wasn't tremendously shocked by the fact that Spain lost, but I was absolutely stunned, like I think everyone else was, by the manner in which they had their pants pulled down and got their bodies well and truly spanked by the Dutch. They were hopelessly exposed time and again. I think there had been concerns in Spain before the tournament started that their central defence was a potential weakness, and so it proved, because Gerard Piqué and Sergio Ramos got the absolute runaround. Arjen Robben terrorised them. Daley Blind had a blinder, I thought.
That's very nicely, done.
Great decision for a blind man.
The only thing is, a lot of people now have been saying that Arjen Robben has got redemption for his terrible miss in the last final, which I think is a bit premature to be saying that. You know, he still hasn't won the World Cup, and he'll always have that horrific memory haunting him to the grave.
Depending, of course, on what happens in this World Cup, you know, further on down the line. But an amazing event there in Salvador, even before kickoff, of these tremendous scenes of just an orange army making their way to the stadium, and then the game kicked off, and it looked like it was going to be business as usual for the Spanish with that questionable, I'm going to say questionable, Xavi Alonso penalty.
I agree with you. I think it did look like it was going to be business as usual. There was the first real chance did fall to Holland. Robin put Schneider through. He missed. And then they seemed to take control of the game. They had a number of chances to make it 2-0. I think David Silva missed one from after being played through a great pass. It was... That Robin van Persie goal didn't so much come out of nowhere, but I think in the first half of all the outfield players, he'd had the fewest touches, and that sort of swung things, really. Once the Netherlands took the lead, Spain looked really flat, really limp, just didn't have an answer. Casillas made a number of mistakes.
All right, well, let's just talk about that. Gaz, for example, tweeting, saying, has the title race in the Liga and then the Champions League, has it tired Spain's players, do you think? And on the subject, Casillas, John Terry, one of the worst displays by a top-class keeper in the World Cup finals, question mark.
I think with Casillas, to some extent, we could see this coming, because he made a mistake in the Champions League final for Atletico's goal. He was obviously at fault on a number of occasions here. I mean, if Mourinho dropped him last season, Ancelotti dropped him for much of this season, apart from the Champions League, maybe they had their reasons in that sense. And I guess the question leading into the next game against Chile will be, does Del Bosque drop him?
Well, interesting, and it's a crucial game now because there is the prospect of them not making it out of the group. And goal difference is massively against them now.
Yeah, I predicted before the tournament started that they wouldn't go out of the group, and some people thought I was absolutely raving. But
Did you commit this to print anywhere, Barry?
Yeah, and I think I said it on here, and I definitely mentioned it on Twitter. But I'm not sure why I thought they were... I mean, I'm a huge fan of Chile, of whom I'm sure we'll be talking about later. And so this was always going to be a crucial game if either team lost this game. I do think Chile will progress, which means Spain or Holland are going to go out, and it would look very much like it's going to be Spain at the moment.
All right. Well, a special night for the Dutch. Let's hear now from our very own team, a Dutchman, Michael Jongsma of Benefit.net.
Hey, James.
How are you?
You're quite jubilant, actually. What a game.
Yeah. You sound a little bit more jubilant than when we last spoke, when you were expressing the opinion that the team might not make it out of the group even. Nobody saw this coming.
No, it's an extraordinary victory, and the feeling of revenge lives within the Dutch community is really big. They're just so happy to finally have put that 2010 final behind them. And there was an overall sense that this could be a game that the Dutch could actually get something out of, in the sense that a draw should be on the cards. And Van Gaal, he knows what he's doing, and there was a slight confidence in that, but a 5-1 victory against Spain was the last thing people had on their minds a few hours ago.
Yeah, this kind of thing doesn't happen to Spain. What do you think was the key? What enabled Holland to take them apart so comprehensively?
It's something I have touched on before, I think, is that with Robin van Persie and Arjen Robben, you have two world-class attackers that you can rely on to change the game. And apart from that, I think the lack of an identified dribbler at Spain's side kind of cost them. Davy Blind at left back, who was kind of a worry for us in the sense that he lacks a bit of pace, was never put under real pressure, and he effectively became a second playmaker from the left. And the way he set up Robin van Persie for the first goal was just magnificent.
Yeah, and also Robin, I think that was the ball from Blind as well, no?
Yeah, Blind had two assists, and as of Tayoan has told us, it's the first time a Dutchman has given two assists in a World Cup game since '98. So that's quite a long time ago. And David Blind was very influential from the left. I think at the back, Ron Vlaar actually showed that he's a really good defender when he has to man mark a striker. And yeah, overall, it was just a very dogged performance, and I think the cohesion in the Dutch team was amazing to see, really.
Right. What's the reaction been like around Holland?
Well, Van Gaal was actually quite composed. He said, well, we haven't won anything yet. It's just one game. So he was quite relaxed, but still quite focused on the other games. Robin van Persie actually said that the managerial staff had told... I told the group that this was how the game would pan out. Obviously not with this score, but they had a feeling that they were aware of the tactics of the Spanish. And overall, just a very positive reaction. And Arjen Robben said he's the second captain of the Dutch team. And he said, well, I'm just so proud of the boys and the way they performed and stuff. So it's a very, very non-egotistical Dutch side, which is quite odd for us.
Yeah. What's the reaction been like in the Netherlands then?
Yeah, well, when the first goal went in, the equalizer, people started throwing around fireworks, the cars were honking, people were just shouting and screaming all over the place, and it's been quite an emotional night for most, because the expectations of this tournament were so low, and Spain was still such a scar in Dutch football history. And there's a sense of relief. We have actually come to this tournament to share some good football. We have a decent chance now to make it out of the group, even evade Brazil if they become first in their group, and we do the same. So yeah, I think everybody's really, really taken up by the whole thing.
Right. Except for this one guy I was reading on Twitter who said exactly 6 years ago the Netherlands beat France 4-1. We got knocked out in the quarterfinals. Not getting carried away yet.
Yeah.
Mikael Jongsma.
Yeah. I was, 6 years ago we started the tournament brilliantly when we first played against the reigning world champions in Italy. We won that game 3-0.
Oh,
we were magnificent.
In Vienna,
it was a similar type of football as they have played today, actually. It's very fast, counter-attacking football. And then against France, who were the losing finalists of 2006, we also battered them with 4-1, and there was a huge expectation, and we were like, "Well, this will be our tournament," and it all went a bit flat afterwards. We were defeated by Russia in the quarterfinals, so yeah, it's not time yet to get our hopes up. We'll see. We'll see how that will be when we're in the quarterfinals.
Well, remarkable. Spain conceding 5 goals in an international for the first time since losing 6-2 to Scotland in June 1963. Another stat you may have seen, Spain conceding more in this one game than they did in the whole of qualifying.
Iker Casillas was, I think, 84 minutes away from breaking Walter Zenger's World Cup clean sheet record.
Wow. What about Van Gaal?
Yeah, I guess it was encouraging from a Manchester United perspective, wasn't
encouraging?
It?
Encouraging? Encouraging, James.
Just a bit. Yeah. You saw the relationship that he had with Van Persie after the goal, those sort of wild high five on the sidelines, and Van Persie made a real point of running across to him. I think it was a great display. I thought they were really quite bold because, again, in the early stages in the first half, they looked like they could get caught. They were quite brave in the way that they defended because the two players either side of Ron Vlaar really kept coming out and left Vlaar one-on-one with Costa quite a lot of the time, who got some brutal insults from the Brazilian crowd. And you thought that Costa would get the better of Vlaar, but he didn't. I think Vlaar had a good game and the goalkeeper had a good game as well. So, on the whole, you've got to commend Holland for being brave.
Mm. Best team we've seen so far, no?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Now, they take on Australia next, and Spain, as we mentioned, have Chile. And we've just seen Chile and Australia face each other, Barry.
Yeah.
I say we, you largely, me rather less so, but go on. I was thinking.
All right. Resting your eyes. Mm. Chile were expected to come out with all guns blazing and put a hatful past Australia, but they didn't win anywhere near as comfortably as the scoreline suggests. After going 2-0 up within, 15 minutes or so, it looked like it was game over and it would be a matter of how many they scored. But Australia's more experienced senior players sort of dragged them back into the game. Tim Cahill was excellent. Spring heel Tim scored with a header, was very unlucky not to score a second. He had a brilliant header, but was just a mite offside, so it was correctly disallowed. And that was one of the more shocking aspects of that game, that a match official finally got a tight decision correct. Australia will feel very aggrieved they didn't get a point out of that game, because they had the chances and just some good goalkeeping and last-ditch defending. Chile's weak point, like Spain, is definitely they're at the centre of their defence, and they were shown up a bit by Tim Cahill.
Why are you so convinced then? And James, do you share Barry's conviction that Chile are going to make it out of the group probably at this point at Spain's expense?
Well, I thought they would be better than they played this evening, but I think they will improve.
Right. So you think they can get at least a draw against Spain?
I think they'll beat Spain.
Would you go along with that, James?
I think they're an awkward team to face. I think the way their attack set up is poses opponents with problems. Sanchez can stretch it. We saw the kind of runs that Vargas made for the second goal, I think it was. The first was after a long passing move. But they do leak a lot of goals at the back. Yeah, I think of the South American teams that qualified, you know, they had the worst defence with Uruguay, conceded 25 goals. So I think that's a concern. But they can score. Going into that Spain game, considering what we saw from Piqué and Ramos today, I think they could have some joy. I think Spain really miss Puyol. I don't think there's a particularly good relationship between Ramos and Piqué. I mean, technically understanding, not personally, you know. But they didn't seem to be on the same wavelength for a lot of that match. So, yeah, I could see Chile getting a result to go through in that.
Well, it did take quite a special performance from the Dutch and a couple of players in particular. Amazing goals from Van Persie and Arjen Robben, which we haven't really touched on. So just before we move on to Saturday's delights, how about that header from Van Persie?
Yeah, apparently it was his first touch in the Spanish half that half.
Mm.
And it was a splendid piece of athleticism. It was kind of like he was doing that dance move. What's it?
The worm.
The worm, yes. Yeah, but in midair.
Mm. Extraordinary. And Robin's wasn't bad either. The take and then the touch to bring it past away from the defenders.
Yeah, classic Robin in many respects. You know what he's going to do put it onto his left foot, but no one can stop him from doing that. I agree with Baz. Yeah, Dali Blind had, I think, first two assists, but his 50-yard ball for that Van Persie goal. I mean, I saw Ruud Gullit complaining on Twitter before Holland equalised about this long ball game that they were playing. But, I mean, you're not going to outpass Spain. I guess if you can go over the top and you have a striker like Van Persie who, as we've seen for United over the years, has been able to volley in sort of big long diagonals and that sort of thing. It's a tactic worth pursuing.
Now, the Cameron Mexico, Rafael Marquez becoming the first player to captain his country in four different World Cups. That's good. And Peralta making it 9 goals in 7. And they could have had a couple more, could they not, Mexico? You were mentioning the linesmen and their offside decisions. There were a couple of shockers in that match.
Yeah, Giovanni Dos Santos had 2 goals disallowed. He'd be fed up over that, despite getting the win. But Cameroon were very disappointing, really. They just seemed far too cautious and unwilling to take any risks, as if they'd just a draw would have done them, you know, but they were very lucky to only lose 1-0. And it's there was nothing there to remind me of any sort of previous Cameroon teams I've seen at the World Cup.
They've lost that magic, have they, Barry?
Well, on the evidence of tonight's performance, but it may just have been a bad day at the office. But yeah, I just thought they were far too cautious.
I mean, Eto'o missed a gilt-edged challenge at one point. I thought one of the bright spots for them was the sort of relationship between him and Esua Cotto. They seem to have some good link-up play. But at the same time, I thought Mexico were surprised. I mean, going into this tournament, you heard a lot about how they struggled in qualifying, how they've been through so many managers, that they hadn't been able to build on that team that had won the 2012 Olympics. Peralta was a member of that. I think he scored twice in the final against Brazil. And justified his place in the team again today, ahead of Chicharito. He did come on and then missed a chance. But I think they could be a bit of a surprise, really. I think they could, considering what we saw from Brazil against Croatia, they could be a problematic opponent for them.
A problematic opponent? Maybe making it out of that group?
Quite possibly, yeah. I think every time they've won the first game in a World Cup, they've got out of the group. That was a stat I saw today.
Really? Okay. All right.
Apparently, Luis Felipe Scolari has talked up Mexico and said that, I think he said that there could be a stone in our shoe. And on the evidence of today's performance and on the evidence of Brazil's performance in the opening game, I'd say he's dead right.
Right.
Mexico's coach said he wanted them to be a rock rather than a stone in the shoe.
A rock in the shoe.
Yeah.
All right, then. Some crazy news stories today. Here's one that wasn't crazy. Bakary Sagna joining Manchester City. Franz Beckenbauer. You see that? Banned from football for 90 days. Germans always get penalties around World Cup time, of course. But
That's true. What's he banned from doing?
FIFA football activity. He said it's not a problem.
Well, I wouldn't imagine it is.
Mm. But it's interesting, isn't it?
I mean, if he wants to say, do some keepy uppies with his grandson out in the backyard, is he allowed to do that?
Nope, that's football activity.
Play Pro Evo? Nope.
It's very interesting.
Probably not play FIFA. I reckon he could probably play Pro Evo.
Right. But he was a voting member of FIFA's executive committee when they chose Qatar and Russia as their eminently sensible destinations for 2018 and 2022. But then, well, the very stories, he didn't cooperate, says FIFA, with Garcia's investigation into that voting process. He says because they didn't send him the questions in German. Your favourite story of the day, though, James, was very much Raymond Domenech.
Yeah, he seems to think that France knocking Ukraine out of the playoffs for the qualifications caused the Ukraine Crimea crisis.
Yeah, if they had eliminated us, says Raymond, they would have had something to cling on to by saying, we're going to the World Cup. Let's talk about something else and take on the Russians on the pitch. Involuntary, we are perhaps partially responsible for the crisis in Ukraine.
Yeah. Football really does have a very, very high opinion of itself and its importance.
Yeah. I miss Domenech. He's, you know, proposing during press conferences, his star sign selections, and reading out what communiques from striking players last, what, 4 years ago?
Yep. Well,
I miss the man.
Me too. Me too. Now, on to Saturday's action. Saturday starts with a Group C match between Colombia and Greece. I'm going to file this one under interesting because we can see how these teams really are.
Yeah, although I suspect any game involving Greece may not be particularly interesting. I think it'll be a very cautious game.
Oh.
Greece will sit back and defend, and Colombia will be sort of... I suspect after the feast of football we've enjoyed thus far, this could...
Saturday is going to be less.
Well, I think this particular game, and indeed England-Italy, may bring us back down to earth with a resounding thump.
Oh. Well, Colombia ranked 8th in the world, many people tipping them for glory of some sort in Brazil, so we shall see how they get on against Fernando Santos's Greece. The other matches...
Sorry, one point of interest in that Greek lineup is whether or not Kostas Mitroglou will play after his rather disastrous first few months at Fulham, in which he, I think, played a sum total of about 110 minutes or less.
I'm surprised it was that much.
Yeah, it may not have been that much. I don't have the exact figure to hand. But whether his fitness issues are still... Because he was, like, banging them in for fun with Olympiacos and then... just didn't get a run out. He sort of became a standing joke at Fulham, so he may not even make the lineup.
Right, I would be fascinated to see him in action, and I'll get the chance, perhaps.
I mean, he could come out and just be this really lardy, unkempt bloke who once was a footballer,
but
has let himself go.
But as you say, in this past Champions League season, he was banging them in for Olympiacos, so. Who knows, eh? In Group D, Uruguay will be taking on Costa Rica. Uruguay won't be able to field Luis Suarez, apparently, but then neither will Costa Rica. And Uruguay do have Edson Cavani amongst their other options, so...
I like the sound of this Costa Rica manager,
Jorge
Luis Pinto.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently his nickname is Explosivo.
Oh.
He's explosive.
Quite a few explosive managers at the World Cup, aren't there?
Yeah.
Hmm?
But they nicknamed Explosivo.
The Mexico manager looked quite fiery and volcanic.
Yeah, he's nicknamed the Laos.
Oh, the Laos?
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of someone from Colombia called Explosivo.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Mm. And I read somewhere today that the Uruguay manager, a lot of his players are very superstitious, and while he doesn't buy into it, occasionally they will demand that he wear a certain lucky tie.
Really?
So he kind of obliges just to keep them happy.
They've had an interesting build-up, haven't they, with the ants infesting their hotel, Uruguay.
Yeah, getting into the goalkeeper Fernando Muslera's bed.
Mm.
Don't know how they got in there. They just, you know, crawl in.
Single cry.
Being ants. They could be flying ants, as you're saying, yeah.
I, for one, would like to welcome our new ant overlords.
Right. Costa Rica?
Well, Costa Rica drew 1-1 with the Republic of Ireland last week or the week before in a very spiky friendly in Ooh. Which one of their players was dismissed. And I think there were the general consensus was they were pretty hopeless in defence, but not too bad going forward. They've got Joel Campbell, obviously, who's this Arsenal player on loan at Olympiacos.
Brian Rees,
who is not popular at all among Fulham fans because he's apparently not very good and doesn't try too hard. Although he's not unique among Fulham players who did that or who were guilty of that last season. And it's difficult to see them getting results. But I don't think Uruguay have much about them apart from Suarez and Cavani.
Yeah, I think they're not as sparkling as they were 4 years ago when they were in the Copa America. I think to some extent a lot of the young generation coming through, players like Gaston Ramirez, Sebastian Coates, haven't sort of matured and come on to the effect, to met expectations, if you like. And I do, yeah, I think they're, yeah, if you're a defence that's relying on what, Diego Lugano, then you know, you're going to have to outscore opponents. So Suarez get healthy soon, I think.
Mm. Fascinating. The other two teams in Group D are, of course, England and Italy, who face each other in an eagerly anticipated clash Saturday night on the lush green verdant lawn that is the pitch of the, what's it called?
Arena Amazonia.
There you go. Lovely. Mm. Some of which has been unpacked for the occasion, apparently. Anyway, we'll be talking a little bit more about the extraordinary conditions that await both teams at this venue. What about the Italy side coming into this? Montolivo got we fractured his tibia. Do you think he's going to go Prandelli with the doppio play of Verratti and Pirlo?
Yeah, looks like it. There was an injury to Mattia De Ciglio in training earlier in the week.
Playing at left back,
so the expectation is that Giorgio Chiellini will come across. I think that's reassured some people because one of the weaknesses that Italy have had in their warm-up games has been sort of incursions in that area. And Chiellini, being a centre-back, quite rugged, should ensure they're a little bit more solid.
He likes to maraud upfield as well, doesn't he?
He does.
And, I like Chiellini.
They nicknamed the Gorilla.
Hmm.
He's got a... economics degree.
Has he?
He got 99 out of 100 in his university final exam, I think. He's also a landlord to Ciro Immobile. So when Immobile's pipes burst, he calls Giorgio Chiellini.
Right. So he's big in the settore immobiliario.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, the fullbacks are expected to push forward in this system.
Are they? Because when they did this system previously, there was a bit of an issue with width, wasn't there?
Yes, because
a lack thereof.
A lot of the play, when you have De Rossi, Pirlo, Verratti, Marchisio, Candreva, who are all central players, naturally it's all congested in the middle. So yeah. Even Luxembourg, a team like Luxembourg, had a lot of joy down in the wide areas. So you'd think with possibly Sterling, possibly Barkley, Lallana, they could have some joy down those areas.
Could have a field there.
They could, but yeah. If Chiellini's down one of those... paths, then I think it'd be a bit more difficult for them.
Really?
Yeah.
You think of someone like Chiellini, who's not the fastest, and
or
someone like
mobile.
Sterling bombing past him.
This is true. I think that's true of any of these fresh new elements that England have got, the Barclays, the Sterlings, because if you look at that Italy back line, Chiellini, Paletta and Barzagli, none of them are particularly mobile. If they can turn them, I think they do well, but it's going to be the case of whether they can get the ball or not. Because I mean, the reason why they're playing this doppio play, this double playmaker, is because if England focus on Pirlo and think shutting down Pirlo will shut down Italy, they'll be wrong, because Daniele Rossi can just give it to Verratti instead, and he can do the Pirlo role himself. So Italy should be able to dominate the ball, which in those conditions, that heat and humidity, they can make the ball do the running and England do the running, then England will be drained fairly quickly, I think.
One or two up front?
For Italy, I think one. I think it'll be Balotelli. Some debate about this because obviously Immobile, in their last warm-up game with Fluminense, they scored a hat-trick and set up the other two goals in a 5-3 win. And contrary to his name, he is a very mobile player.
Right.
And when you play this double playmaker system, so you have two deep-lying playmakers, it helps if you have someone who moves around a lot in front of you and creates gaps and spaces. Balotelli doesn't really do that. Mm-hmm. He likes to either come short and it's quite static. So be interesting to see what happens if Balotelli doesn't perform well. I think there will be more calls for Immobile to start.
What do you think, Barry?
I'm slightly concerned on England's behalf about the fact that many in the media, as James said, seem to think that the Italian midfield is comprised of Andrea Pirlo and, you know, three randomers plucked from the crowd or three shop dummies or something. You know, shutting him down will not necessarily provide the keys to the city or anything. I'm not sure how I think England will do tomorrow. My gut feeling is that they'll probably lose.
Really? My gut feeling is that I think they're going to win, actually.
Do you?
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see how they deal with the conditions. I saw Barney tweeted earlier, he's in Manaus, that he didn't think it was any worse than when he was in Hobart for the Ashes, and he pointed out that at the time Brett Lee, you know, was able to bowl for nearly an hour non-stop. Wearing long trousers, yeah. Yes.
Well, perhaps that's the key.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of, Barney is indeed in the heart of the Amazon. So let's go there now to find out exactly what kind of conditions await. Barney, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. How are you?
Very well. But what about you? Is the sweat dripping off your perfectly formed cheekbones?
Yeah, I'm currently dripping with sweat.
Right.
Still absolutely boiling in my mouth, even though it's now, whatever time it is, deep into the night.
Right. It genuinely is really hot there.
Yeah, it's genuinely boiling. I mean, today was actually a bit cooler than yesterday, apparently, but it's one of those things where if you walk 100 yards, you find your clothes sticking to you and you basically just want to sit down for the rest of the day.
Right.
And I've been inside the stadium as well, and I've seen the grass, which it looked extremely green. Apparently, they've been spraying it overnight.
They have.
And it looks, it's a lovely stadium, I have to say. It's incredibly hot in there, and I honestly couldn't imagine running around for 90 minutes in it. Tomorrow will be fascinating.
It will, won't it? You tweeted some comparisons with the world of cricket, in which you suggested that this shouldn't be too much of a problem for highly paid professional football players.
Well, it's true. I was in Hobart last year and in Perth. And it was kind of as hot as it is in the Manaus. But I think, football's a uniquely exhausting business. It's absolutely killing humidity as well. I don't know, the whole thing of the heat slightly bothers me, because England have been talking about it now for such a long time, and, you know, they've wheeled out their magic potion drinks tailored to each player's physique. This is standard in other sports. I just wonder if they spend as much time working out how to pass the ball to each other properly as they have worrying about the heat, because it probably wouldn't be so much of a problem. I'm hoping they'll combat the heat by not running around like a bunch of headless chickens tomorrow. That's my great hope.
It's an interesting plan you got there, Barney. What about the rest of the... What about Manaus in general? Is it filled with slightly sweaty-looking English fans? What's the build-up been like for you?
It is... I'm actually... Right, as I was speaking to you, I'm squashed up against one of these England fans. there's quite a lot of England fans here. I think there's going to be quite a lot in the stadium tomorrow. It's turning very English, yeah.
Right, okay. And the town itself, I'm picturing a large opera house kind of emerging out of the tropical vegetation. Is that about the size of it?
It's not exactly the jungle. It's a really nice town. It's a cool, relaxed, nice town. It seems quite mellow and fairly prosperous, to be honest.
Right.
It does feel slightly on the edge of civilization, particularly right at the moment.
Right. Yeah.
It does have a very nice opera house, Barney, with, I believe, marble ceilings or floors shipped in from Germany. You might want to go and visit it.
Well, I'm actually on my way into the centre of town at the moment. I'm hoping to see the opera house, yes.
Well, Barney Rone having a lively time of it there in Manaus, which is where it's all happening come Saturday evening. And post that match, we'll be back with another Guardian World Cup Football Daily. Do make sure you join us for that. Many thanks to Barry and James, Michael, Barney and producer Ben for this evening's special. Enjoy your Saturday. Enjoy the football. We'll speak to you Sunday morning.
World Cup Football Daily, just like being in Brazil.